All right. Welcome everyone to the Identity Implementers Working Group call for February 11th. Thank you all for joining. We have some good things to discuss today. A lot is happening in all the various working groups. And we also have Riley Hughes, who's the CEO of Trensic, joining us for the later part of the call. And he's gonna give us a presentation on what Trensic is doing in identities, and I hear it's lots of good stuff. As we get started, the link is in the chat for the wiki page that I'm showing you on the screen. If you would, feel free to go to that page and add your name to the attendees list. That helps us see who's joining and participating in the calls, and then if we need to get a hold of you at some other time, that's how we can do that. The Linux antitrust policy is in place for this call. What that essentially means is we are a community of collaborating competitors. We are all collaborating on all things identity, but then we have our respective day jobs where there may be proprietary information or so forth. We ask that you keep proprietary things out of this call so that we can all participate. But we do ask that you contribute things that you want to share or collaborate with the community on. So everybody's welcome. For this call, normally what we do for those that are new is we try to touch on a variety of things that have happened. We touch on a variety of things that have happened in the various working groups, and then we invite someone from industry who's implementing products or functionality, APIs, all things identity to come and present and show us how all these things work together in their product lines. And so let's see, are there any new people on the call today who would like to introduce themselves?
Michael Herman here. I'm new to this particular call, but I've been in the decentralized identity space for quite a while. I'm the founder of the Trusted Digital Web Project, and the three things I'm currently focused on are secure file formats for storing verified credentials. I'm quite active in the DIF Secure Data Storage Working Group from an architecture perspective, and I've recently published a new white paper, SSI Personal Data Use Licensing, a new framework, and if people are interested, I can send out some links. Thank you.
That's excellent. Thank you for joining us, Michael. If you'd like to put those links in the chat, I will grab those and add those to the wiki page after the call.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. Let's go ahead and get started then. By way of announcements, the Thoughtful Biometrics Conference is coming up on March 9th. That link is there in the wiki page as well. And the next IIW workshop is taking place in April. It's entirely online, so very convenient to attend. For those that haven't been, this is an excellent conference with a lot of late-breaking developments from the identity community. There's a very diverse group working all aspects of the identity space, whether it be Internet of Things or biometrics or the standard things we work on here on the Hyperledger projects. There's just a wide range of topics. So I highly encourage that if you're able to attend that conference. All right, let's get started on the working group reports. Did anyone attend the main identity working group this last week?
I did not.
Okay, that I put the links to their latest up on there. What they did this week is there was kind of a roundtable presentation discussion about different topics they want to cover in 2021. And so there's a video recording of that. There's also some slides. Contributors meeting. Any new developments there?
Sorry, couldn't find the mute. Things are moving forward with CI/CD upgrades and upgrades to Ubuntu support to enable 2004 support.
Excellent. Thank you for that. I know that we're pushing for an Ubuntu 2004 upgrade, and I know that's in progress. I know at our company we've practiced backing up our Sovereign ND Steward node and restoring it, so we're getting set up for that, and those upgrades as they're coming. All right, let's see. All right, Hyperledger Aries. In the A call this week, there was a really interesting presentation about facial recognition and biometrics and how they tie into identity solutions. I put a link to that page, and then I also put a link to the presenter's GitHub repo. There's a lot of source code out there. He'd been working on that for quite a while. Did anyone attend that wants to add anything to that?
I thought it was good. The question of verifying, additionally, who is the user of the app is kind of a common thing that I've seen show up a lot. So that was a really good piece of that discussion.
Yeah, it was really good. It was thought provoking. I like the biometrics. They make things easy. They have some pros and cons depending on how they're implemented. So I thought it was a pretty good presentation. Any updates from the Aries working group B call?
It's a good conversation about appear-did method 2 that is highly related. Also, the process of the Aries project exiting incubation. Stephen Curran's been driving that. And then some really good conversation about the sub-targets of AIP2 that are the right ones. So good conversation there. I think we're actually getting semi-close there on coming up with what we want to be in there. The only thing that will remain is RFCs that pin down specific versions of things. There's a number of things that we've just never created RFCs for, but to include them in the AIP, they need to have RFCs for that. So good progress there.
Excellent. One quick question on that. So we have the current Aries interop protocols, and then we have the V2 that's upcoming. If somebody is just getting started, do you recommend they implement 1 and then go to 2, or should they start just with 2 right now?
Depends on your target. If you want to interop with projects that already exist and you have a fairly short timeline, AIP1 might be a reasonable place to start. There's a lot of similarities there for 2, so there's not a ton of lost work. If your timeline is a little more further out, maybe 4 months or something, then or longer than that, then I think targeting the beginnings of AIP2 is probably more worth your effort.
Excellent, thank you. And on the Aries exiting incubation, that is, there's a link there. That's pretty exciting. It was about a year and a half, a little more ago, that Aries started. So having that exit, the incubation status is pretty exciting.
And it should have happened about 6 months ago or more.
Yeah, it's a very mature. It's a very mature platform. It's in continuous development, but I go a number of places throughout the identity community, and it's always a topic of discussion. So it's got good support throughout the community. So if you'd like to take... Go ahead.
Credit to Stephen here for making this happen. We're Aries is a little bit weird. Generally, people come with a project and they need to grow the community. Aries is a little different in that we have a big community and we're still growing our products. There's good efforts there, but it looks a little different than a lot of the other Hyperledger stuff. And Stephen is doing a fantastic job sort of plowing through the differences there and presenting our case to the technical steering committee. So it's good. From a community health perspective, we look better than most of the other projects, despite the fact that, you know, there's still plenty of work to do internally on the software that is part of the group.
Yeah, to add to that, we have kind of the opposite problems as most proposed projects. So if any difficulty we're going to have is that we haven't necessarily taken care of all the clerical work as carefully as we should. And it might take a little bit of time to make sure the TSC understands some of the challenges we face as they are somewhat different than other projects we usually review.
Yes, thank you to everyone who's participated on that. Stephen, for getting that underway here recently and pushing that through. Anything we can do to support that, please let us know. Let's see, the agents, Aries agents seem to have some evolutionary developments this week. Anyone want to make any comments, any updates on those? I've noted a few things here in the wiki page.
Yeah, there's just a couple of things I wanted to highlight. Akapai 060 is almost available. We're very close, but we're doing last minute checks on things. There was some cleanup in out of band handling earlier this week, just to get that nailed down. There was something reported today that we're still investigating. So it's not quite there, but very close. Updated readmes, there's more documentation and so on. Also wanted to highlight down in the tools section, Aries agent test harness. We've been doing Aries framework Go interop testing, or starting that. So we're still, BCGov, I should say, is still doing all that work. And we really want to get others starting to contribute to that. So I'll highlight that we have found in doing this, you know, we can get tests with Go to Go working, but you know, when we went go to Akapai, we found little tiny things that had to be fixed that are getting fixed each step we go. And it's really proving value that we can interop. I had another introduction to a wallet last night that I was trying, and lo and behold, it didn't claimed AIP 1.0 compatibility, but didn't work with at least the BCGov stuff. So we're trying to figure out, so we'll work with them to figure out why, but you know, if the test harness is really showing some value at being able to, you know, have a nice clean place to test every merge, or at least every day is the way we're doing it, is pulling the latest code from various open source repos and running tests and making sure things continue to work as each of them evolve independently. So encourage people to take a look at that and contribute to it.
Okay, and thank you for that. Is this link right here that I'm highlighting, is this the appropriate test harness?
Sorry, no, it's Hyperledger. It is a Hyperledger repo, so just replace BCGov in that link with Hyperledger. I can do that. Don't worry about it. I'll do that right away. It's been donated to Hyperledger. And as I mentioned, we're running, we have GitHub Actions that pulls the source code from .NET, Akapai, and now Go, and runs interactive testing of all of those through the, there's like 400 steps and about 30 odd scenarios that test various components of AIP 1. And now we're starting to expand to things like data exchange and out of band as well.
Excellent, that's amazing. It's really neat to see all these projects start up, build on the same standards base that we're developing, and then even though they use different code bases sometimes, to turn around and be interoperable. So that is really cool. All right. Yeah. If you could update that link, I'll probably copy it up above so people know that when they're working on the different agents, that's exactly how they test and that's what the standard will be. The Hyperledger URSA call this week, I did not attend, but I read through their notes. Did anyone attend that? All right. So there's work going on the BBS Plus Go implementation, as well as continued work on the zero knowledge proof frameworks. And so I provided that link there, both to the meeting agenda and the main work page. So if cryptography is your thing, then that's a good place to be in that group. Lots of good things happening there. Over at the Trust Over IP Foundation, there was a steering committee meeting this week, yesterday. Yesterday, and that was very good. There's an effort that has been presented called the Good Health Pass, and so I've provided links right here on the wiki page. We've heard in Hyperledger circles a lot about the COVID credential initiative to use identity and verifiable credentials as part of being able to cross borders and assert that you've had the disease and recovered or got the vaccine and therefore are not going to be contagious and so forth, so that we can move out of this COVID-19 lockdown mess that we've been living in for a year. And so there's a lot of people working really hard to facilitate that, and that will be very good when it comes about. The Good Health Pass is kind of a consortium of various organizations, whether they be healthcare, the CCI initiative that I just mentioned, and a variety of interested and contributing parties. And so I've put the link to their website. There's also a white paper there about their efforts that I was just introduced to this yesterday, but I'm excited to read that paper. Daniel, I see you raised your hand.
Oh yeah, and if I could, if you're interested, if you go to that link you have, there's a webinar introduction to Good Health Pass right after this call.
Excellent.
So if you go to that link, you could register for it to get the details, but it's immediately after this call.
Excellent, thank you for that. And I see that Alex put a link in the chat, so we'll add that to this page.
Because I just registered, so yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that one right after this.
Yeah, this is really exciting because what this does, we all may not be tied to health efforts specifically in our respective jobs, but what this is doing is it's solidifying verifiable credentials as a viable cross-industry identification proof and verification method. And that's really exciting that this is coming about, because it's whether or not we're working in health specifically, it is helping our entire industry. All right. Let's see. Any updates from the DIDCOM working group this week?
Good continued progress there. Discussing attachments is one of the things we've done, and how to simplify it between version 1 and version 2. There's implications there for how we can avoid the processing and space implications of re-encrypting already encrypted stuff. So that's under discussion.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Let's see. Any updates from the interoperability working group over at DIF? I did not attend that one this week. I was tired.
I attended the first part. It was a review of revocation options presented by Martin Rydell. I was not there for the whole conversation. I had to leave to attend something else, but he seemed to do an incredibly good job of outlining what those options were, including proof of non-revocation, which is a different strategy that's more unique to the indie community than it is for all of the other solutions. So that was very nice to see accurately represented.
Excellent, thank you. And I've here in the chat, I've put links to both the recording and the presentation slides. Over at Sovereign, we had a technical governance board and steward council meeting last week.
Sorry, can I jump in for 1 second?
Sure.
I was just coming back to this credential revocation. I have a possibility of a bit of funding between now and the end of March for somebody to work on revocation and ACAPI and doing some work on revocation that would apply to JSON-LD/BBS+ credentials versus the anon creds approach. And if anyone is interested in working on that and has the time, let me know. Just reach out and contact me. Thanks.
Excellent. I know we have a lot of indie developers, no pun intended, that are always looking for contract work. So where do you post that other than contacting you directly?
Just contact me directly on this one. This is slightly different. This is not a BC Gov piece of work. So just contact me directly.
Got it. Thank you very much. So there's a couple of things going on at Sovereign that it's worth being aware of. One is there is a active discussion as part of upgrading to Ubuntu 20 for the steward node or the indie nodes. There's a discussion about potentially removing the token that the Sovereign token code that had been added to that platform. And so if that's of interest to you, there's a discussion going on over there, as well as how to upgrade libindy and what those evolutions will look like. There's a couple of different directions. BCGov has created some shared libraries that a couple of which have migrated from seed efforts into Hyperledger sub projects, and I've provided those links up above. And then there's ACAPI and a variety of things that you can check out there on what comes next, follow on to libindy projects. Let's see, looking at the time, I want to make sure we give Riley adequate time and reserve some time for discussions there. Any questions on anything before we move on? All right. Well, I'd like to thank Riley Hughes for joining us today. I met Riley first when he was working at Sovereign, and now that he's together with others, put together Trinsic and become CEO of that company. That's really exciting, amazing progress. And so I look forward to hearing from Riley about some of the new things they're doing at Trinsic and then how we can interop with those or use them directly. Riley, are you ready to go?
Sure.
Excellent. Let me stop sharing my screen. And there it is for you. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So let's see. I've got a little slide deck here. And many of you know me. And so I can sort of speed through some of this, but I guess I should probably cover some of the bases for folks who aren't aware of Trinsic. By way of introductions, I think I should have a slide on that. Yeah. So I'm Riley. I kind of got my start in the SSI space back when I see Nathan George on the call, back when the Sovereign Foundation was Nathan George working out of Phil Windley's office, and I joined at that point. So I was the first sort of non-executive, non-board member type person to join the Sovereign Foundation. And shortly after me, Michael Boyd joined as the first software engineer that Nathan hired at Sovereign. And then Trinzic is also, another co-founder of Trinzic is Thomas Lov, who built the first Aries framework. And Michael, by the way, was a contributor at Sovereign Foundation, along with a few others, on the original kind of indie agent project, which is now the the Hyperledger Aries, which sort of spawned and evolved into the Hyperledger Aries project. So we've been around, Trinzic's been around for 18 months or something like that. We kind of were the first, to my knowledge, company that had a hosted production grade Aries-based solution out there for developers to just get started using, in like less than 5 minutes. And for that reason, we sort of grew pretty quickly as when we launched that, and now have a pretty decent sized customer base, including our customers having issued credentials in production to over 100,000 end users across 5 continents. So we have a pretty broad coverage in terms of the globe and various folks building on Trinzic. The way we do it is we try to position ourselves in the market like a Stripe or a Twilio, in the sense that, we are a low touch developer tool, in the same way that Stripe is a developer tool for implementing payments functionality into any application. At Trinzic, we strive to be a low touch API tool set for implementing verifiable credentials into any application, right? So, that's how we've positioned it, and I'll show a little bit about what that looks like, so you can see how developers can get started using Trinzic. So I want to tell the story of how we got started. Really, the Aries project was launched in 2019, and the folks at BCGov were hard at work on the Python, ACAPI. And Thomas Lov, my co-founder, was hard at work on the AriesFramework.net. And, there was good progress made, but there were no mobile apps that were Aries compatible at the time. And so BCGov launched a Code With Us project, and Thomas Lov worked on that and developed what was at the time called StreetCred ID wallet. And that's really how this got started. So Thomas Lov did that. He went to IIW and showed interop between Aries.net and Aries Python. And that sort of spawned a lot of the conversations that led to Trinzic getting started. So that's how the Trinzic wallet got started. So, a lot of folks know us as a wallet company, but in reality, our business model and our primary product that, we all spend the vast majority of our time working on is our platform. So it's we have 3 APIs. One is called the Credentials API. It's for issuing and verifying credentials. The other is the Wallet API. It's for creating and managing cloud wallets. We sometimes call them custodian wallets because they are controlled by, the controller of the application, not necessarily by the individual in the same way that a mobile wallet might be. We have an API called the Provider API, which is used for spinning up issuers and verifiers programmatically. So it's a multi-tenancy functionality, essentially. It allows, right before we launched it, we had a set of customers who were using it and beta testing it. And one of them created 13,000 verifier agents in a single script, and then sort of integrated them into their application. And that's really the functionality of the Provider API. It allows an SSI project to really scale beyond, in a way that's very easy and programmatic. So this is a slide about some other wallet offerings that we have. As mentioned, we're known as kind of a wallet company. And so in many ways, we get a lot of folks who are interested in the in the wallet stuff. And so we have some other offerings like, you know, we white label the wallet and we have what we call a mobile starter kit, which is basically a wallet that that comes out of the box and just doesn't have a UI on it for folks who want to build their own wallets. And we're really interested in this concept. Milan Patel from IBM raised this. And so in terms of our roadmap and how we're thinking about wallets and where they're going, there was an awesome blog post, like I said, by Milan Patel that talked about the different models of wallets in an SSI context. And I'm actually, I have my little pen here that I can draw with. So this full cloud wallet is kind of what exists in our wallet API. That is the, you know, the full kind of custodian wallet. It's a cloud wallet. It's controlled by the controller of an application, et cetera. This is actually very, very popular for us. One thing that was surprising and not necessarily, you know, expected or planned for was that this full cloud option is actually more popular than our Trinsic wallet, which is this light cloud option. So the Trinsic wallet is over here, right? And then we have the like Ozma is over here, or I guess it's called Amex now. And this is really where the wallet is all local, and the only cloud component is this message routing mediator agent, right? We've been surprised to see how popular the full cloud wallet is. If I'm being honest, there's you know tens of thousands of them now that have been, you know, that our customers are using, and it's a convenient option. It's easy to get users onboarded into the system. It overcomes the kind of like, hey, go download this app problem. And it's also useful when, you know, as an implementer, you don't sometimes necessarily need your users to know that you're using SSI. Sometimes you just want to have them authenticate and abstract away a lot of the complexity behind that. And so that's useful. And then also there's some guardianship type use cases that the full cloud wallet is used for. But we actually are really interested in this hybrid cloud model where wallet storage can live in the cloud, but the keys can be at the edge, and the software agent that speaks DIDCOM and, you know, knows how to handle the encryption and routing and all that, that can live partially in the cloud and partially locally, so that you can do some offline operations and so that you can you know, have you know, obviously agent capabilities in the cloud as well to access the wallet and whatnot. So anybody who's working on this stuff, I would love to talk and, you know, maybe share notes about what we have been working on and see how we can work together and avoid duplicating efforts if possible. That's always, you know, something we're very interested in doing. So we have a small enough group, we can feel free to make this be a conversation if there's any questions or feedback up to this point.
Riley, yeah. How is your progress on that hybrid cloud? That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah. So we don't have any product that is this hybrid cloud yet. So we have quite a bit of progress sort of in a lab environment, in an R&D environment. But we don't have anything, you know, that's productized or ready to go with this hybrid cloud model yet. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Alex. Great presentation, by the way. For your provider's API, what version of Hyperledger is that on right now?
Yeah, good question. The provider API, so one piece of background, I think that I maybe glossed over or mentioned briefly, is that Tomislav was the kind of guy behind the Aries framework .NET, right? And so the .NET framework has had, I actually don't know if the multi-tenancy aspect comes out of the box in the .NET framework, or if it's specific to the way that we just host the agents in Azure, which is the cloud provider that we use. But anyway, we're using Aries, the most recent version of Aries framework .NET. And then the multi-tenancy capabilities may be specific to the hosting implementation rather than a general kind of general use open source tool.
Michael Herman here. I've been posting some comments in the chat. I've been working with the Trinsic platform and I've really been impressed with it so far. And I put a few comments there. And then the chart you have of the cloud versus local, that's very similar to one that I created for a document Daniel Hardman and I worked on, mostly Daniel. And there's a link there.
Awesome.
I have a few, more ideas there.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Cool. Well, I will just point to a few developer resources, and then I can switch my screen sharing to my full screen to show like a couple of other things. I think this is really, really it. One other thing I'll talk about briefly is the four keys to SSI adoption is a post that I put out a few weeks ago, and it's another important part of, I think, Trinsic and the Trinsic story. I left Sovereign to start Trinsic with Thomas Love and Michael because of the adoption situation. You know, I had been at Sovereign for almost 2 years. I had seen lots of companies. I mean, for those of you who are familiar with Sovereign, I kind of was over, like my first baby was the Sovereign Steward Program, right? When I joined, I think there were like six Sovereign Stewards, and then and then I created a kind of program around that. And that was kind of my first job really. And so got to talk with a lot of organizations who are interested in being stewards or interested in working with Sovereign. And I just felt like there was so much interest, but so little real world actual application of this stuff. And I, you know, was trying to figure out why that was the case, because I'm passionate about this technology and this movement, really, this self-sovereign identity movement. And so, you know, one of the answers that I had come to based on conversations I had with all sorts of folks in the space was that the tooling was not very easy for developers to get started with. So as you can imagine, you know, the Aries project was just getting started. Prior to that, it was like, you know, developers got to use the Indie SDK directly for their implementations, and that wasn't very conducive to building, you know, applications quickly and with low overhead, right? So, and then commercial offerings out at the time were very expensive and early, right? Early stage. And so we started Trinsic really, and initially it was quite simple. It was just, you know, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to build this whole startup company or anything. It was like, let's just release an API that makes it really easy for developers to use this stuff. And like abstracts away some of the complexity of using in the SDK or something like that. Let's just make it easy. And so that was really the start. And, you know, we decided once we found, you know, once we reached over 100 developers that were using the APIs every month, we kind of realized, okay, maybe we have something here that people, you know, actually like and maybe willing to pay for. And that's when it kind of, you know, turned into something more like a company, really. So SSI adoption is kind of one of the key pieces of the Trinsic story. And so I've been focused on, I was the lead of the business of SSI working group at the Sovereign Foundation for quite a while, and have continued to do a lot of that research about what does it take to get this technology actually usable out in the wild. And, you know, I can drop a link to a blog post I wrote. I think where we are at in the adoption of SSI in terms of the, you know, the adoption lifecycle is there's somewhere in this light blue highlighted area, which is to say that, you know, nobody I've ever talked to questions whether SSI is really valuable at scale. Once this is widely adopted, right? Once it's ubiquitous, it's unambiguously, super clearly, extremely valuable. To all the participants involved, issuers, verifiers, holders, everybody. But prior to that, it's less clear where the business value lies and what the path to getting over the chicken and egg problem is. That said, I think we've made some good progress. And like I said, I just posted a link
to a blog post about some thoughts I have on this if you're interested. And then here, there's some other developer resources. If you're a developer and interested in getting started, we have reference applications, open source reference applications for all of our APIs and a documentation site that I can show here in a sec. So while I switch over to my other screen, we have a little time left. Does anybody have any questions for me? Okay. Yeah, Steve, I saw you come off mute. Do you have something?
Oh, no. You're doing great. We're looking forward to the demo portion.
Sure. Can you see my screen?
Yep. Yep, we can see it.
Okay. All right. So this is our website, right? I just want to show real quick what it looks like to get started. Click the sign up button. And I'm already logged in, but essentially it's as simple as, you know, create a username and not a password, right? you get a verifiable credential emailed to you that you can use to log in. But you just put your name and an email and click one button and you're in. And this is what it looks like once you're into the Trinzic Studio. The Trinzic Studio is a front-end web application for issuing and verifying credentials and also creating cloud agents. So this plus organization button is how you create a cloud agent. You can call it, you know, demo agent or something. We've got a list of indie networks here that you can use. The Sovereign Network charges $10, so we're not going to do that here. We'll just use StagingNet. You could also use the Indicio net. And then you can also select where in the world your cloud agent is hosted, right? So I can host this one in Singapore and hit confirm. And I could also, of course, upload a logo or something. and, you know, so this is what the Trinzic Studio is used for. You know, we have this demo agent hosted in Singapore. I'll look at this Faber College one though. You can see there's just a little dashboard and a user interface. I can create connection invitations. And if I scan this with my phone, it would, I'd establish a connection with it. I can look at credential templates that I've created. Looks like I already have one called College Diploma. If I want to create a new one, I can do so by creating a new schema, or I can use an existing schema. And all I need to do is put in the schema ID and add a new tag. And I have a credential template that I can use. And then I just click this offer credential button, fill in the details, and then I can either create an offer link or I can issue it to an existing connection. By the way, this is something that is uses the sort of ephemeral stuff in Aries to create a connectionless credential, which is what this offer link does. And then verification templates, of course, are in the same way, right? You can make it, you know, check revocation or not. You can say, okay, I'm going to check your driver's license and I need your name and age and address from that. I can maybe put age down here as a predicate. Say your age has to be whatever. And then I can create another credential request and call this one, you know, your proof of identity or something, and you know, add a couple of attributes here, and then this creates a verification template that I can then use to verify credentials. So as you can see, we've really tried to optimize for making it easy for people to get in and get started, and not have to worry about what's really going on under the covers. But that said, as I mentioned before, we are, you know, our focus is on developers. All of our kind of efforts around the product work that we do is focused on making things easy for developers. And so over here, I've opened up our documentation site. It's just this link right here. Here in the documentation site, we have, you know, conceptual documentation and then our API reference, as well as some other tools that can be used to, you know, for developers to learn how to, you know, how this stuff works, right? Here's what a credential is, and here's how to issue them, and you know, here's how to revoke credentials, and here's how it works under the covers, in a very, very sort of high level way. Obviously, we don't go into the deep dive on how a revocation accumulator actually works, but we definitely, you know, this is the conceptual documentation here. So we have that, and then we have a tutorial here, which you can step through to basically do the Alice and the Faber College demo using the Trinsic products, and then some developer tools here. So a few things that I'll show is, the first thing I'll show is the API. This credentials API here looks a lot like what you might find in ACAPI or in APIs from other commercial vendors. It's all the basics to issue and verify credentials. We also have this wallet API, which, as I mentioned, is built for holders. So it's really all the functionality that you get in the, you know, this is not a real COVID-19 vaccination credential, unfortunately. But as you can see, you know, we've got the wallet over here on my screen as well. And the wallet API has basically all of the functionality of the mobile app. There's a few things it doesn't have, like here in the mobile app, I can share individual attributes from a credential with a connection, right? And I can, you know, share, I can, you know, send presentation proposals and things like that in the mobile app. That's actually a capability here in the wallet API too. But I think there's some things that are, you know, there's not total feature parity, but for all intents and purposes, the wallet API has all the functionality a holder would need to, you know, interact with an issuer or a verifier. And then again, the provider API here, enables you to spin up issuers and verifiers and configure them with, you know, their network, the region they're hosted in. And then it also has some high level analytics, which is pretty cool. You can query all the analytics of all your cloud agents and get results from that, right? And we have SDKs in several languages that we host, or you can spin up your own. It's based off of the Open API spec, so it's pretty easy to create a service client for whatever your favorite language is. Okay, the other thing I was gonna share is integrations, which I think is something that is kind of neat that we at Trinsic have. We partnered with a company called Zapier to expose a whole bunch of integrations between verifiable credentials and other, 2,000 plus other applications, right? I mean, not sure that verifiable credentials are actually useful with 2,000 other apps, but in theory, if you could find a use, then, you know, you could integrate with up to 2,000 other apps through this Zapier platform. Here we have a tutorial that allows you to clone some pre-made templates and other things. We also have a video of us walking through this tutorial that you can watch and get a walkthrough of it. But really what it is here I've got the page, the Trinsic page on Zapier. Basically, you can connect several Trinsic API actions to any other application's API in a workflow, right? So I could say, you know, I want to connect my Google Sheets with Trinsic. And if I click on that, it'll say, okay, you want to connect Trinsic and Google Sheets? Well, here's some things you can do. There's a popular one that somebody, I guess, is using. Oh, I've used this before. Issue credentials from new spreadsheet rows in a Google Sheet, right? So you could actually, you know, import a CSV into a Google Sheet, or you could have a Google Sheet that sort of, you just add new lines to it. And every time you add a new row, a credential is issued based on the data in that row, right? And then, you know, whatever the, you could say, okay, when I get a new connection to one of my cloud agents in Trinsic, then I want you to, I don't know, delete a spreadsheet row. I don't know why you would ever do that, but you could, right? Or you can say, you know, whenever there's a new, an updated row in a spreadsheet, so you update a name or an address or something, then I want to, you know, issue a credential to one of my connections, or maybe issue a credential connectionless form, right? And so you can sort of build workflows, and you can do this with multiple apps, right? The initial kind of use case for this was the last IIW, and potentially this coming IIW. I mean, it's not finalized yet, but last IIW, we integrated Eventbrite with Trinzic so that, it was this integration right here. So whenever a new attendee was registered in the IIW Eventbrite event, then a credential was issued, which was, you know, on Sovereign Mainnet, which represented the IIW ticket. And then that ticket and that credential was sent to the user via the email that they used to register for the Eventbrite event. And then we had an after party at IIW that you could only get into if you had the credential, which was kind of a cool use case. So that's the other thing I wanted to share. I think that's really all the content that I have to share. Of course, I could talk for hours on this stuff, but what questions or feedback does the group have? Love to discuss.
That is very impressive, Riley. Thank you for presenting that. I didn't know that last part that you did. I didn't know about the connections to the Eventbrite, for example. That's pretty neat. Any questions for Riley?
Stephen, it sounded like you were about to.
I was just I was just complimenting you on that's awesome stuff. Really, really like it. Would like your thoughts on an open source full wallet. So if we go through those three scenarios, the third one being a full wallet. Full mobile wallet. Thoughts on open source versions of those?
I guess, can you add a little bit of more to your question specifically around the Aries mobile agent Xamarin that's out there? I understand that's out there, and I understand there's some things about it that are not maybe ideal, but yeah, I'd love to hear more color around that.
Basically, in talking to other people I've talked to, that it seems like the wallet is kind of a loss leader and something that's very difficult for but everyone's trying to make one so we're interested in seeing if there would be a willingness across the community to build an open source one on basically like Chromium idea, where whoever wants can deploy it, can take it that last step to actually deploy it to an app store. But in the meantime, instead of everybody sort of implementing, spending money to get their own up to a certain level, we combine the efforts so that the user experience is far superior to any single one. And that people are working together and doing things like putting it into the Aries test harness so that we can ensure that there's ongoing compatibility across different Aries stacks and so on. So that type of model.
Yeah, and then where do you see the Aries mobile agent Xamarin falling short, aside from maybe the user experience and a couple other things like that?
It is a possible place. I'm interested. I mean, obviously it hasn't really been touched in several years or over a year. So, but what I'm really interested in is that, anyone who's doing serious wallet efforts sort of combine onto an open source one rather than continuing.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always a fan of collaborating, and not duplicating efforts. My concern with that would only be really around the user experience, where people have different ideas about that, and some folks may want things that are, I don't know. Some folks may want a simpler experience that doesn't include some things, and others may want the richness, and I don't know. So, you know, those are some of the high level things. But I mean, just for what it's worth, the Ares mobile agent Xamarin is on our list of things when like, you know, we have a developer whose job it is to make sure that, you know, that doesn't just become stale and useless. I mean, of course, we don't spend a tremendous amount of time, you know, keeping it super amazing as much as we do, you know, on our own wallet. But we do make contributions to keep it from falling out of existence, if that makes sense. And like, for example, I think, you know, 9 months ago or something, we did something around the mediator protocol with it. And then Thomas Lobb filmed a little tutorial video to show how to get it up and running. And that's been popular, and we've gotten a lot of feedback, like, you know, a lot of thanks from the community for that piece. And we'd like to do more of it, you know, but anyway, so yeah. And if you hear of anybody saying, you know, there's things wrong with Ares mobile agent Xamarin, or it's not running or things like that, then, you know, let us know. And you know, we try to take that project a little bit under our wing, even if we're not super, you know, we're not doing as much development on it as we would on, you know, one of our own things, if that makes sense. But yeah, we wanted to make sure that it's there and it's useful, and it's not just become stale, you know. Okay. Yeah, Horacio.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something there. I have been looking at the OSMA code for over like a year now, and I can confirm that if you make APR, someone is going to look at that code base. Also wanted to add that I agree with your point that it's very hard to provide a foundation for UI that is going to make everyone happy. I think like something that we could work together in this attempt to get SSI more adoption is to agree in what is like the best UI for people that are like starting their own wallets, and just contribute that to the OSMA repo or some other repo that can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks.
Well, excellent. Excuse me. Riley, that was an excellent presentation. I've seen your presentations before, and I learned a ton this time. So thank you for joining us and for that presentation. We have a comment in the chat. Are your slides going to be available?
I don't have these slides in a public place right now, but I don't see why not. I mean, I could put them up in a public place. You know, yeah. Mike, I'll just email you separately, maybe. But right now, I don't have these slides in a public place. Although there's nothing, you know, special about them or anything.
Okay, if not, that's okay. But if you'd like, I could also post them directly on the wiki page here, so that you don't have to find a special spot. We do get a couple of people that listen to the recordings later and might have the same question. So up to you. If you'd like, I could post them on the wiki page. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I hope this was good and interesting for you. And we will meet again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much and have a great day.
Even more.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks.